The Christina Borgeson Show on TNT.
So I'm back with my guest, Barbara Honegger, who is an investigative researcher who has done amazing work on looking into the events of 9/11 at the Pentagon, and she was just talking about some key witnesses. So let's continue this conversation, Barbara.
Yeah, okay. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we were just, I was just mentioning these critical witnesses in the Sheraton Hotel. So the Sheraton Hotel was just, would have been west or east. I'm not good with directions. Anyway, it's just off of the west side of the Pentagon, which is where the attack on the Pentagon happened on 9/11. So if you go further off of the wall, I don't know, I'm guessing about a mile or something like that, maybe something like that. There's the Sheraton Hotel. And so we had just discussed.
Barb, be careful about the thumping.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. We had just mentioned the three Pentagon, I'm sorry, the three Sheraton Hotel workers who were on the top floor, which I believe is around the 17th floor, the top floor, when they heard a screeching noise, which of course was the spooling up of the engines. Every single witness to the Pentagon plane, the one thing that they do agree upon is that in the final approach towards the building, that the plane increased its speed so that you could hear the engines ratcheting up, and that makes a tremendously, you know, loud noise. So they heard this. They heard this loud noise as the entire Sheraton Hotel shook. And of course, they were just below the roof. They were on the top floor in the banquet room when this happened. And they thought that the building was going to fall, that it was shaking so much. And then right after that, this plane, quote, filled the entire plate glass window, filled the window. And then it flew going downward towards the Pentagon, which was right in front of them in the distance. And then it just before the Pentagon, there was this fireball. So that's what these three Sheraton workers saw. And then I was just getting into the incredible corroborating witnesses. Deb Anloff and her husband were on the 14th floor in their hotel room when exactly the same thing happened. And when in my Pentagon conference video, which your listeners will be able to watch, because I'll give you the link to go to it online on Rumble or BitChute. You will be able to see the explicit quote from their testimony. It is identical to these three women on the top floor of the Sheraton Hotel in the banquet room. So there's absolutely no question that there was a plane, that the plane made it to either the wall or close to the wall of the Pentagon. And then there was a massive fireball, which we have to infer from that perspective, because their perspective was basically perpendicular to the wall. So they wouldn't have been able to see if it actually crashed into the wall. What they were able to see was the massive fireball, and then no plane was visible right after the fireball, which is exactly the testimony of the air traffic controller who was on top of the Pentagon heliport in the air traffic controller's booth, and also the Pentagon helipad fireman, Alan Wallace. So back to the witnesses, I'm going to give you one other critical witness. A number of critical witnesses. Another critical witness is April Gallup. Now, April Gallup had been on pregnancy and childbirth leave for 2 to 3 months just before 9/11. And as fate would have it, it was her first day back on the job. And she got to, I've interviewed her under oath on videotape for 2 hours.
Now, what was she doing at the Pentagon? What was her role and where exactly was she?
Mm-hmm, yeah, very good. Her role at the Pentagon, she was in the Army area, the Army administrative area. Which interestingly, her desk was not even in Wedge 1, okay? So Wedge 1, if you think of the west side of the Pentagon, which is the side of the attack, that it was a little over 3 football fields long, a little over 900 feet long. The midline is about at the 460-foot point. To the right of that was Wedge 1, which is where the official story claims the 757, Flight 77, hit the building at Column 14. She wasn't even in Wedge 1. She was further to the left or the north in Wedge 2. And again, the helipad, where all of this wreckage is to the left of the midline off of Wedge 2. So inside the outer ring, the Pentagon has 5 rings. The outside ring was the E ring. The inside ring was the A ring. So it went E, D, C, B, A towards the center courtyard. Her office was just to the left of the center line in Wedge 2. And at 9:30, precisely 9:30, and she knows that because there was a massive explosion at or near her desk just inside the outer wall of Wedge 2, not far from the helipad, the heliport, at 9:30. And she knows the time because when she luckily, she miraculously survived with her infant son. He was only about 3 months old, Elijah.
Wow.
They both miraculously survived. And when she came to in the hospital, her wristwatch was stopped at 9:30. And she made sure that her wristwatch was working properly and was exactly set to the proper time because that was her first day back at work. And if there's one place of business or work in the world that is punctuality obsessed, it is the military and especially the Pentagon of the United States. So she had set her watch and she got into the Pentagon subway metro stop at approximately 7:30, and she went straight to her desk. And as she was about to press the on button on her computer at exactly 9:30, there was a massive explosion that killed many, many, many people in her area, her Army administrative area, including the auditors, the special auditors, who were trying to track what happened to $2.3 trillion that Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld had held a press conference the day before 9/11 on September 10th, saying that the Pentagon could not locate the missing $2.3 trillion. Those auditors were killed in that same massive explosion.
So let me ask you something. 9:30, was that, what time does the official story say the plane hit the Pentagon?
Almost 9:38, almost 8 minutes later. In other words, even if it were true that Flight 77 had not been swapped, you know, right close to the Tennessee-Ohio Kentucky border, which we know from a number of lines of evidence, including that the FAA air traffic controllers saw it precipitously descend before the transponder was turned off, that the military radar denies, and they can't both be right, right? So even if it was Flight 77, a Boeing 757 that made it back to the Pentagon, it could not have been Flight 77 that was at the Pentagon at 9:30. Even if Flight 77 had gone, you know, made the turn and come back east, and it was the same plane, which it wasn't. But even if it had been, it was still at least 30 or 35 miles outside of Washington, D.C., when this massive explosion happened inside Wedge 2, at least 180
feet
from the alleged impact point almost 8 minutes later. Okay, so April Gallup is a critical, critical witness, and I have her on under oath. I swore her up under oath, under penalty of perjury, for a 2-hour under oath videotaped testimony in 2006.
Yeah. Now, go ahead. Talk about it.
You go ahead with your question. I wanted to mention April. Well, there are other witnesses I do want to mention that are critical. Okay, so I'm going to ratchet back a little bit to the big picture and compare what happened at the Pentagon with what happened at the World Trade Center that we already know. We know for a fact that there were pre-placed explosives and incendiaries at the World Trade Center. At a very minimum, military grade, insulfurated nanothermite and thermite. That is a fact. So there was pre-placed explosives and incendiaries at the World Trade Center. That is the real cause of the collapse of World Trade Centers 1 and 2, the Twin Towers, as well as World Trade Center 7, which wasn't even hit by a plane, which came down around 5:20 in the afternoon in New York City. So we know the real story in New York City on 9/11 was that the planes were just the cover cause. They were real impacts. There was a little bit of fire and smoke afterwards that caused some office fires, but that was not the cause of the massive numbers of deaths below the impact points in New York City. So going back to the Pentagon, now that we know there were pre-placed explosives at the World Trade Center, doesn't it make sense to look for evidence of pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon? Yes, it does. And that really is where my research on the Pentagon began. It began with this under oath testimony that I took on videotape with April Gallup. And it went from there because in my presentation to the Richard Gage's Pentagon conference about a month ago, which you can, your listeners can watch the video of, we'll give you the link to go on the show pages for this show. You will see the testimony, multiple testimonies of witnesses from inside the Pentagon on 9/11. These are military personnel, high-ranking officers in most cases, stating that there were a series of explosions on the inside of the building that went like pop, 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 kind of like you know, when you have controlled demolition to bring down a building. This is precisely the exact testimony of witnesses at the World Trade Center.
Now, is this again before the plane hit?
Well, first off, I don't believe the plane hit.
Well, before allegedly a plane hit?
Yeah, before the plane, I like to say before the plane destruction at the Pentagon, however okay. It was destroyed. Okay, yes, absolute. Well, excuse me, let me back up. Some before, some after, okay?
Okay. Okay.
So both. And also there was an overwhelming smell of cordite. When the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Hugh Shelton, arrived at the Pentagon on 9/11, and in his memoirs, his published memoirs, his book about his life in the military and as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff on 9/11, General Hugh Shelton states that when he arrived at the Pentagon, he was away for a while. When he arrived back that very day, that the smell of cordite was still overwhelming. Cordite doesn't smell anything like jet fuel or burning jet fuel or office fires for that matter. Cordite is an explosive, okay? It can be used for controlled demolition. And the smell of cordite was not only by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but by multiple witnesses, including April Gallup and including a number of other witnesses, one of whom said that the moment he stepped, when he experienced the pressure wave from an explosion. He was fortunately not anywhere close to where it happened. But when he first experienced it and opened his office door, I believe that was on the south side, so adjacent to the west side of the Pentagon, he opened his door. His name was Danner, last name Danner. When he opened his door, the smell of cordite was overwhelming and, quote, then I knew explosives had gone off in the building, unquote. There were literally hundreds of witnesses who then raced out of the building of the Pentagon, out the south side exit, because they couldn't go out the west side after the actual violent events at the Pentagon. They couldn't go out that side. It was so hot that the concrete in the outer pillars of the west side of the Pentagon had melted. Concrete cannot melt anywhere wow. as low as the temperature of burning jet fuel, okay? Not anywhere close. At the World Trade Center, there was also melted and recoagulated and rehardened concrete that reaches multiple thousands of degrees in temperature compared to maybe usually 500 to 600 degrees Fahrenheit for burning jet fuel. So again, we have these parallels between what happened with some kind of pre-placed explosives inside the building at the Pentagon, the same as at the World Trade Center. These are very critical.
Let me ask you something. Nobody picked up, I mean, what's interesting is at the World Trade Center, and maybe it's because one is a military installation and one is not, because if people were able to collect the dust or whatever from the World Trade Center to find the nanothermite and the, you know, evidence of explosives having been used there, I'm so curious as to, I mean, you're talking about these witnesses that smelled cordite and this and that, and yet nobody has any evidence, nobody took out any evidence of explosives involved in the...
Yes, they did.
Who?
April Gallup. I mean, this is true of a number of witnesses, but April Gallup is the only one who has gone public, to my knowledge, and this is in my under oath videotape testimony of her. April Gallup saved her, she lost one of her shoes, by the way, getting out of the building. There was massive fire and the ceiling fell on her and she had to pull herself, and she thought that her infant son had died. Luckily he didn't. But she lost one of her shoes, but she has kept her shoe. She has kept her clothing, and she has kept her wristwatch that stopped exactly at 9:30 from the violent event inside the building.
And nobody has ever tested any of that?
No, but I'm trying to get her to do so. She doesn't want to do it yet, but, you know, we have to work on her. It's extremely important.
I mean, she must, first of all, I mean, I've spoken to her personally, and she's in a lot of chronic pain from what she experienced, chronic, and of course the trauma, the PTSD, and of course if you have something that critical, and clearly there's been a very powerful, you know, from the highest levels cover up of this entire thing, do you think April really wants to have her stuff tested for explosives?
Well, so far she doesn't. She's not willing. But that doesn't mean that she won't. That doesn't mean that she won't. So there has to be somebody out there. I believe, Christina, that we just simply need to advertise, probably in the Washington Post or something like that, for anybody to come forward with any piece of debris that they kept, you know, that could be analyzed on the surface that they haven't cleaned. That they have put in some kind of a airtight container. There has to be somebody besides April, or in addition to April. But this does need to be done. I've talked to Niels Herod about it, and he's willing to do the analysis.
Wow. I mean, it's so hard. It's hard for people to be that courageous. I guess people could present themselves anonymously, but then you have a chain of custody problem, don't you?
Yeah, no, it can't be anonymous. It can't be anonymous and have credibility at the other end. That's the problem.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I was going to mention that people need to remember, if you don't know already, that the one of the interesting things about where the alleged impact of Flight 77 happens at Pentagon on the west side of Wedge 1 at Column 14. One of the most important things about that official lie is that that happened to be the only one of the five sections of the Pentagon called wedges. It was Wedge 1 of five wedges. The only wedge of the Pentagon that had just been hardened to presumably withstand a terrorist attack. None of the other four wedges had been so hardened. And one of the important things about the fact that it was hardened is that the outside walls, as I mentioned, the outside walls, even of that newly hardened section, had many windows, and the columns between the windows were not changed. The columns going way back to when the Pentagon was first constructed during World War II in 1941. The Pentagon, by the way, was either the Pentagon was dedicated or I believe construction began officially on September 11th, 1941. And the Pentagon attack on 9/11 was exactly 60 years to the day later. Very interesting.
Yeah,
very interesting historical tidbit there. But the importance about the hardening of that very part of the Pentagon where the official story claims a plane hit on 9/11 is that there were still all of those windows, but they had been replaced with specially tempered glass to withstand, to prevent shattering, you know. Because at Oklahoma City, for instance, many people were seriously injured or killed when the glass in the windows shattered. So they had replaced those windows with, I think, 1 to 2 inch thick. I believe it was 1 inch or 1.5 inch thick, special glass that would not shatter. And then they also had added something between the windows like Kevlar, you know, a Kevlar vest that policemen, yes, military people wear. Well, they had added Kevlar between the windows around the columns, and the columns had not been changed because they were already had spiral rebar inside of those concrete columns from way back in September 11th of 1941, and so they were still there, and they were effectively hardened already. So not only does the official story claim that a huge 757, 100 tons, going at almost 560 miles an hour, hit on column 14 in wedge 1, but that column 14 was still there and almost vertical afterwards. You know, it's physically impossible. What the government claims happened at the Pentagon simply did not happen at the Pentagon. And it was only the Pentagon attack on 9/11 that allowed the government, and in particular, the Pentagon itself, the military of the United States, to declare war.
Now, let me ask you something about this, having changed the windows right before and hardened that area and so on. So are you implying basically that they did all that knowing that this was going to happen and they wanted this section to withstand?
Oh, no, I have no, I think it's, I don't know, but it depends upon who you're talking about. If you're talking about the people who were planning this for a long time, yeah, of course they knew. That's one of the mysteries of 9/11. Why would they choose that very wedge, the insiders who knew this was going to happen and were making sure that it did and orchestrating it? Why wouldn't they just have the plane crash into the courtyard or crash into, if they were real terrorists, if the official story were true, they would have simply crashed the plane into Donald Rumsfeld's side of the building, on the other side of the building. They would never have chosen just above the ground on the newly hardened wedge that had hardly, relatively speaking, any personnel inside to be killed. There were only an estimated 800 military personnel who had gone back into their offices. There would have normally been between about 4,500 and 5,000 personnel in that wedge, but there weren't. If you were a real outside terrorist, Al-Qaeda or anybody else, you would never, that is the last place you would have ever chosen on the planet, even within the Pentagon itself, to attack. You would have never chosen there.
Well, I don't know. I find it interesting that, that, for example, nobody has come forward with any explosives evidence, as we have discussed.
There's all kinds of explosive evidence. I go into it for a whole hour. You know, one PowerPoint slide after the other. There is overwhelming, compelling and converging lines of evidence of pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon, both inside and outside the building. However, if you're referring simply to an analysis of the dust or the residue on pieces of wreckage, no, that hasn't happened yet, if that's what you're mentioning.
No, I mean, you mentioned the melted concrete, okay? Yeah. You mentioned the confettiized pieces of the plane.
Correct.
You mentioned the eyewitnesses hearing these pop, 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 some before the official story.
And attack
and after. All right, I want to talk more about this on the other side. We have to take a break right now.
You should hear what Misty Winston is talking about.
I want to actually talk a little bit about the class divide with you, because I think that, you know, you just mentioned the class war, and we are in, I don't think people recognize it, we are in a class war and have been for some time. The middle class, the working class, we perhaps have been unaware of the fact that we're in a class war, but that's been going on for a long time. So let's talk a little bit about that and the class divide. Well, how do you see things right now? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of distractions being thrown our way to kind of prevent us from looking, from noticing the man behind the curtain.
Right. I think people really need to pay attention to what's going on economically in this country. And I don't just mean in reference to inflation. For example, I talked about this the other night. Bill Gates is actually buying farmland in the United States, a lot of farmland. And there was a woman that came on my show about 2 weeks ago, and she was telling me that Bill Gates is stealing water from her town.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
A bushfire tip from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service.
It's a fact that cars are a significant cause of bushfire. Parking in long dry grass means hot exhaust and hot brakes may start a fire. When travelling in bushland areas, remember to park in designated car parks or away from dry vegetation. And whatever you do, don't throw cigarette butts out the car window. Prevention of bushfires is your responsibility. Get FireWise. For more information, contact your local fire station.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with my guest, Barbara Honecker, who has done an amazing research job into the events of 9/11 at the Pentagon. Barb, we were just discussing explosives evidence. If you could, just give me a list, just a rundown. There's this, in terms of the explosive evidence that you present in this presentation that you've been talking about that we're going to try and get our audience to take a look at.
Right. Okay. And let me just remind everybody that I will be sending you right after this show.
I know you're sending the link, and I'll post. I'll try and post it, but I think we should actually read out the link in case that doesn't happen.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. I will have to bring that up here in a little bit. Because I don't have it on the screen, but I will give you that. If by the link you mean the link to my video of my presentation at the Pentagon conference.
Yes.
I'll give you. I'll read that out a couple of times at the end.
Okay.
Be sure and let me have enough time to do that at the very end and find it. Okay. So when you say explosive evidence, do you mean explosive in the analogy sense? I think
in the ordnance sense.
Oh, in the ordnance sense. I've already gone into a lot of it, and
I just wanted like a recap. So we were talking about the melted.
No, I understand. I understand now. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's photographic evidence. Okay, and again, you have to just watch the video of my Pentagon conference to see this all for yourself. And I give the links on the PowerPoint slides for you to go to it and see more for yourself. You don't just have to rely upon the PowerPoint slides in my Pentagon video presentation. But there are the photographs. There is a critical photograph. I don't think I've mentioned this one yet. There's a critical photograph. Let me back up a little bit. For those who remember at all about the Pentagon attack, you will probably remember that there was this huge billowing black smoke cloud. Well, guess what, folks? That smoke cloud had nothing to do with, or very little to do with, anything that happened inside the Pentagon or on the wall of the Pentagon. That was a diesel fuel trailer that burst into flames, and the diesel fuel fueled this massive smoke cloud, this black smoke cloud that drifted off to the right or the south for hours and hours and hours. And that was not the wall of the Pentagon per se. So after that diesel fuel trailer burst into flames, and we know the precise time that that happened, and this is my own research again, there was a security camera on the roof of the DoubleTree Hotel, not too far from the Pentagon, that captured the initiation of that smoke cloud in the distance. And there was a digital, an embedded digital clock in that roof security camera at the DoubleTree Hotel that recorded the time of the initiation of that huge smoke cloud at 9:34 and 10 seconds. Now, again, the official story claims that a plane didn't hit the building until almost 9:38. Okay, so we know that whatever happened to cause that massive smoke cloud happened a number of minutes before the official story says the plane was even anywhere close to Washington, D.C., let alone the Pentagon. So you've got this massive black smoke cloud. So moving forward, there is a critical photograph of a huge fireball at exactly where the official story claims a plane hit, but no plane in the photograph. And that black smoke cloud has already well established itself some minutes before when this photograph was taken by Jason Ingersoll, who was a Pentagon, an official Pentagon photographer. Okay. And when that photograph was taken, there was already a second smoke cloud over by the heliport that was a lighter kind of a white grayish color. So whatever happened at the helipad, which I believe was the destruction of the actual plane at about 9:32 and 30 seconds in the morning, and there was the black smoke cloud already well established at 9:34 and 10 seconds, and then you have this huge fireball right where the official story says a plane hit, but no plane. That, I believe, is capturing the moment of a massive internal explosion and or an explosion at the wall that created that opening, that about 50 to 60 foot opening on the ground floor. And there are many, many photographs in my video presentation from the Pentagon conference that your audience will be able to watch themselves. We'll give you the link at the end of the show, radio show. That you will be able to see that photograph and study it carefully. So that's very important. Other evidence of explosives, very important. The official story at the Pentagon claims that a plane hit at about 9:38, a little bit before, 9:37 and 46 seconds, and then it made it through that newly hardened wall, which I go into my Pentagon presentation at the conference, couldn't have happened either, and we give the evidence for that. But even if it got through the wall, the official story claims that it went through three rings and came out the inside of the third of five rings in the so-called exit hole on the inside of the C-ring wall. Okay, well, guess what? The official story claims that's as far as the damage went. However, in my Pentagon presentation, I talk about the witnesses that I personally interviewed, including the Assistant Secretary of Defense at the time before, on, and after 9/11, Robert Andrews. He was the Assistant Secretary of Defense right under Rumsfeld for Special Operations. I interviewed him at the Naval Postgraduate School when I was a senior military defense journalist there. And he told me that on the morning of 9/11, that he and his aide had to walk over dead bodies and massive destruction and flames on the inside of the furthest in a ring. Two rings beyond where the official story says the plane penetrated, even if it had gotten through the outside wall. Okay. So I could go on and on. People just really honestly need to see all the evidence together. It's overwhelming. And, you know, you can just kind of touch the tip of the iceberg on the evidence of explosions here on radio.
So what did, when you interviewed him, was Sheldon picking up on incongruities between the official story and what he saw?
No. When I was at the Navy school, what was fascinating is that because of what the Naval Postgraduate School is, it's here on the West Coast. It's here in beautiful coastal Monterey, Central Coast of California, where I still live, I now live. And I was there for 16 years as a senior military affairs journalist, for 11 years after 9/11 as well. And anybody who was anybody at the Pentagon wanted to come out to the Navy school because we have a golf course here. And they wanted to use taxpayer-supported military aircraft and come out and have a vacation, basically, on paid time. So they would come out and they would give the Secretary of the Navy guest lecture. And then because I was the senior military affairs journalist, I would always be assigned to interview these VIPs, these top civilian personnel, civilian officials from the Pentagon, and also the top military officers. And Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations, Robert Andrews, was one of them. So he came out to give a lecture to a course on counterinsurgency that I covered for my job. And then afterwards, I interviewed him for the DoD website for an article, as I always did. And at the end of all of these interviews with the military VIPs from the Pentagon, for 11 years, I would say, would you mind, I'd like to ask your permission to take off my work hat and put on my American civilian hat and ask you if you'd like to tell me anything about what you experienced at the Pentagon in 9/11. And to the person, they did, including General Ralph Eberhardt, who was the head of NORAD on 9/11. To my knowledge, I'm the only person he ever granted an interview to. Even though
did he say anything interesting?
Yes. Yes,
he
did.
What did
he say? It was what he didn't do that was the most revealing, however. So this was in the Admiral's conference room, just the two of us. It was at the end of a presentation that he was making to some VIPs at the Naval Postgraduate School that I covered for my job. And then he had been told that I was going to interview him for an article. So everybody else left the room, and it was just him and me at this big conference table in the Admiral's conference room. And I started out asking him more questions about what he had just said to the Admiral and other officers, military officers there. And then I said, sir, same thing. Can I have your permission to take off my work hat and ask you about 9/11? He said, sure. And that surprised me right there. And so I had prepared for that moment in case he said yes. And so I had printed out and had in my hand, in on my lap, we were sitting right next to each other at the end of the conference table. I took out from my lap and I put on the table and I said, what I have here are articles that I've printed out, interviews with members of your own organization, military organization, NORAD, from the NORAD Northeast Sector. These are people who were doing the military exercises in New York City on 9/11 on a scenario similar to the actual attacks of 9/11. And I just wanted to know if you knew about that. And there was a long pause.
Oh, wow.
A long pause. And he said, could I see those? I think he already knew that. Okay. So he was at Cheyenne Mountain on 9/11, you know, way over in, I guess that's Colorado, right? He was at Cheyenne Mountain. He wasn't in New York at NORAD Northeast Sector, along with these exercise people. But so he might not have known about it, but I think he did. And he just wanted to convey to me that, gee, he, you know, this was news to him. Could he see these articles? Anyway, I opened them up. I had them, you know, folded like in a letter, normal envelope. And I opened up the trifold and placed them in front of him, and he started reading the top one. I put the most important one on the top, and the headline told the whole story. It was from a newspaper, an online version of a newspaper up there in near NORAD Northeast Sector in Rome, New York. And he took a look at it, and he said, then he said words to the effect, I really didn't know about this. And at that moment, he got red in the face also. And at that moment, the door opened and they, you know, ended the interview, which had already gone on for about 15 minutes. I was only able to do that at the very end. But that was revealing. So that's the answer to your question. It was what he didn't say that mattered.
Now, also, there are people who talk about with the towers, there are people who talk about events prior to 9/11, like these mysterious vans with workers who didn't have to go through security, and people were told don't ask who they are, and they would go to work and they would show up in the early AMs, you know, AM and leave, you know, and spend a time when very few people were in the building, right, and security. So are there any people like that, or anybody talk about that kind of stuff with respect to the Pentagon?
Yes, with a slight variation. Okay. And I'll tell you what that is. Remember that the very wedge one on the west side of the Pentagon had actually been hardened and refurbished. And so there were all of these construction people who had to use, when you refurbish a part of a building like that, you have to have controlled demolition explosives lying around. And they did. They did.
Interesting.
And there were a number of witnesses, including the most important witness inside the Naval Command Center, which was 2 and 3 rings into the building in the West Wedge, where the official story says a plane allegedly penetrated, but it didn't. There is a very important witness named Lieutenant Kevin Schaefer, Navy Lieutenant Kevin Schaefer, who, according to the official story, was the sole survivor of 43 Navy personnel who were in the Naval Command Center, 2 and 3 rings into the West Wedge on 9/11. He said, and he's gone public in a published magazine article in a Navy, official Navy publication, he has stated that there was a massive explosion in the Naval Command Center at precisely, get this, 9:43.
What?
The official story says a plane hit, what was that, 9:38 almost, so that would have been 5 minutes earlier than that. He said there was a massive explosion inside the building in the Naval Command Center, a huge orange fireball at, quote, precisely 9:43, and that it was like a massive bomb, and that he assumed not only that it was pre-placed explosives, he called it a bomb, I'm calling it that, but that he assumed that some of the construction people with their explosives that they had to use, you know, in different parts of the building in order to remove what had already been there and put something else in place in the upgrade of that very part of the building. He assumed that some of them that some of those explosives had gone off. Well, number one, there should have been no pre-placed explosives remaining in that part of the building, because the Pentagon was about to have the ceremony for the completion of the hardening of that very
edge. Right. So those explosives would have been gone a long time ago, because that's for the destruction to rebuild.
No, the explosives were still there. And I've actually talked to somebody who mentioned that they gave me the name of the company that provided the controlled demolition explosives, and that there was a truck trying to deliver before the attack on 9/11 at the Pentagon, trying to deliver more controlled demolition explosives to the Pentagon, because they were about to start doing it on Wedge 2, which is exactly where pre-placed explosives went off near April Gallup's death at 9:30. So yes, there were, of course, still controlled demolition explosives around the Pentagon that were controlled by these people. The main point of my mentioning this in answer to your question is that all it would take would be somebody to infiltrate these construction crews, just like at the World Trade Center, okay? To infiltrate these construction crews, to wear the same kind of uniforms that they did, and put the controlled demolition explosives that were about to be placed in Wedge 2 back into Wedge 1.
Well, has anybody talked to the controlled demolition company about explosives going off on 9/11 inside the Pentagon? Have they said, oh yes, we had some in there? And
well, there wouldn't have been any in there. They were about to have their in Wedge 1, which is what matters for the official story.
No, but is that what they, well, okay, if there wouldn't have been any in there, did anybody from the explosives company say, well, there weren't any explosives from us in there?
Not that I know of. I have not done that, but I do need to do that. I do need to try to contact them. I don't expect them to say anything about it. But the company itself, in my informed opinion, it would not be their personnel who would do it, not with their cognizance. And if they would lose all the business they'd ever had if they had been cognizant of this. There would have been some kind of special operations people, just like at the World Trade Center, who would have infiltrated their operation or appeared to be part of their
well, at the very least, though, it would be interesting to have them confirm that certainly they did not leave any explosives.
That is true. That is true. We already know that, but yes, it would be good to have them confirm that, and I'm sure they would. That's a good thing to do, and I'll try to do that.
Let's just talk about this bigger picture. Since has any additional information come out over time about the Pentagon since you did your research that you think is important for people to know about?
Well, on the spur of the moment, it's a little difficult for me to answer that question because information from my own research, I mean, I have never given up on my research. Let me give you an example. The answer is yes. Let me just give you the first thing that comes to mind. And I did send this to you a few days ago in the lead up to this show. And that is, believe it or not, there is evidence of some kind of radioactive or nuclear event at the Pentagon.
What? And,
yes, I sent this to you. You must not have had a chance to look
at it. No, I didn't. I didn't have a chance to look at that.
Yeah. So on the morning of 9/11, in what I sent you, I don't have it right in front of me, but be sure and look at it. And maybe some of those links can also be added to the show pages for this show, for the audio of this show, to go with the audio link to the show. But just to give you one example, on the morning of 9/11 itself, there is a woman whose job it was, it's in what I sent you, but it was part of her job, something like the EPA or the equivalent for the Washington, D.C. area. Her job entailed having radioactivity detectors, whether it was, I believe it was a Geiger counter or something like that. But it was a radioactivity detector that could, however, I think, unlike a Geiger counter, detect radioactivity at a distance. And about 8 miles from the Pentagon, she detected an extremely elevated level of radioactivity. And so she immediately contacted Lauren Murray, who used to work at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. And Lawrence Murray got her readings, and they immediately contacted the EPA, presumably the EPA main office there in Washington, D.C. And they told the EPA about the elevated readings, and the EPA said they look right into it. And then they got a call or called after some delay, little delay. They got a call or called the EPA office back, talked to the same person who confirmed, yes, there are significantly elevated radioactivity levels in the rubble. Now, when you use that word, that means inside the building, in the rubble at the Pentagon. And the EPA representative said, we believe it's from depleted uranium. Well, there are only a few places you can get depleted uranium from. One of them, and the most obvious one, is in the warhead of a missile. Okay. Now, interestingly, the second presenter after myself at Richard Gage's Pentagon conference just a few days ago, about a month ago, March 19th, and you're going to have the link to my presentation there. I can also give you the link to all of the presentations there, including mine. There were three others. The second presenter was Thierry Meyssan, the master investigator from Paris, from France. And he presented the evidence for a missile at the Pentagon. Okay. And so the warheads of cruise missiles and other missiles are depleted uranium, especially if they are so-called bunker busters. Well, if you have a newly hardened wall, you're going to need something like that to get through it. Okay. And so in the tip of these missiles is depleted uranium. That is the most likely answer, but there are other possibilities. Another possibility is that, and believe it or not, in some, but not all, planes, including some, but not all commercial airliners, there is some depleted uranium, which is extremely dense. It's extremely heavy for its size in the wingtips to add stability to the plane. So, but I've looked into that. The amount of depleted uranium in wingtips of a plane is extremely small compared to the amount of elevated radioactivity that was registered right after the attack, 8 miles from the Pentagon and confirmed by the EPA as likely having been from depleted uranium. So, and on top of that, in what I sent you already, but you hadn't had a chance to look at, Major Doug Rocky of the Army, who is the entire military, not just the Army, expert on depleted uranium and its effects on the human body and how to treat it if you get sick from it. He was reactivated by his military chain of command. He had, was then retired on 9/11, but he was immediately, instantly reactivated on 9/11 to look into what happened at the Pentagon. Okay, and everybody was wearing hazmat suits at the Pentagon when they went into the building after a little bit, when the EPA alerted the Pentagon that they needed to put people on in hazmat suits. They did.
So
that's example. I really should probably, it looks like we only have a minute or so left, and I should give the link to my presentation.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and give
it. Okay, now this is a long link, so I'm going to go slow and I'm going to read it twice. Okay.
Okay.
It's from Rumble. So it's https://Rumble Rumble.com/ VYZQCM dash, and then the word theory, theory, dash, the letter A, dash, and by the way, these are all lowercase, after the letter A, dash, multiple, MULTIPLE, dash, explosions, plural, dash, from, dash, pre-placed, PREPLACED dash, explosives dash, and dash, the letter A dash, the word plane, PLANE dash, the word destroyed, DESTROYE, but without the final D, dot HTML.
Okay.
Now, I'm pretty sure you will be able to post that. Do you want me to go through that quickly?
Don't go. No, they could just rewind if they need to hear it again,
yeah,
because we only have one. We have 1 minute left.
Okay.
So what is your final word on this?
The final word is that what the real story at the World Trade Center is the same as at the Pentagon on 9/11. It's pre-placed explosives inside the building with a plane approach and destruction as the cover cause for the collapse of the World Trade Center towers and World Trade Center towers in New York City and the collapse of the wall over the alleged impact point at the Pentagon. And it was the Pentagon attack alone on 9/11 that enabled our government, and in particular the Pentagon itself, to declare war on terror and it was their ability to call it a new Pearl Harbor and declare war that was the big lie that enabled them to have the pretext to go into Afghanistan.